This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So, what are the options for local publications struggling to serve their communities in the face of plummeting revenue? Well, as of last month, 40 newsrooms comprise the Colorado News Collaborative's COVID-19 coverage network, largely in response to urgent need, with outlets based in richer and poorer communities sharing resources. In Ann Arbor, where the University of Michigan's student newspaper, the Michigan Daily, is the town's only daily, students cover the big local stories, an operation floated by the school's $4.5 million endowment. Having students pick up the slack is a laudable trend, but a risky one. Local stories demand the same specialized skills as national ones, and institutional memory and sources are lost when the reporter turnover rate is that of a four-year university. So what about tapping the tech giants who have profited from all that free news? Sure, they've been pressured to support the local news that populates their feeds and search pages, and sure, Facebook and Google have launched journalism funding initiatives. But upholding democracy has never seemed to be their first order of business. If anyone is responsible for democracy's upkeep, it would be government itself. But again, obviously risky. Some lawmakers want local news included in the coronavirus stimulus bill because it's made the problem much worse. Others argue for a more permanent solution. Or how about a service program in the mold of the Peace Corps and Teach for America? That's an option put forth by a project called Report for America. Stephen Waldman is president and co-founder.
We recruit talented journalists from all over the country, and then we recruit talented newsrooms that are committed to improving their local coverage, and we match the two. So our goal is to have 1,000 reporters by 2024. Now, we just quadrupled our program this year, going from 59 reporters to 225 reporters that are going to start in June. Initially, they'll be covering COVID. Gradually, they'll be shifting to the beats that they were originally assigned to. Could be housing shortage, could be schools, could be covering the military base or veterans or seniors, what the local newsrooms view as the most urgent undercovered issues.
We've lost some 34,000 newspaper jobs in recent years. What you're doing is kind of a drop in the bucket, right?
Well, I think what we're trying to also prove is that we can't just keep thinking in terms of the traditional ways of doing things. So Our financial model is we pay half the salary, and then the newsroom is on the hook for the other half of the salary, but we work with them to raise half of their half from the community. And the hope is this is going to draw small donors who will end up supporting a wide range of local news organizations, much in the way that successful public radio stations have been doing for a long time. In some ways, it's a seismic shift in the way we think about local news. We used to think of it as a business because it was working as a business, you know? But the business models are not going to come back, especially around labor-intensive accountability reporting. We have to have people in the community supporting it through donations.
You will this year or very shortly be placing 225 journalists into the field. Who are these people?
They're amazing. First of all, the average age is 27, so it's not primarily people right out of college. They're radio journalists and print journalists who have a few years of experience, but feel like maybe they're not sinking their teeth into really meaningful beats. They come from all over the place. Five of them are veterans. what unites them is not only do they want a job, but that they all view local journalism as a public service. These are folks who are raising their hand and saying, we want to go work in Oklahoma. We want to go work in low-income communities that have been ignored. We want to go work in rural counties that haven't had reporters covering them in years.
I read on the Nieman Lab website that 40% of them are journalists of color, more than a quarter speak Spanish, more than three quarters are women, and they'll be in 162 newsrooms across the 50 states and Puerto Rico.
Yeah, we're very, very proud of the diversity of our core. It also reflects what we were hearing from the newsrooms. They want to diversify their newsrooms, and they want their reporting staff to better represent their communities.
So I'm assuming that a majority of the reporters that you place are being put into a community they probably don't know. I'm just wondering, how have they been deployed?
About a third to a half of the reporters are from the area that they're reporting in. But the other portion, as you said, are people who are new to the area. Now, that obviously is not uncommon among journalists. It's always challenging to do that. The other thing that we do in order to try to help them sink roots down into the community is that we require the reporters to do a community service project. What we have them do is work in high schools and middle schools to help with youth-created media, meaning like a high school newspaper or a high school podcast or broadcast, partially to excite and train the next generation of potential journalists, to teach everyone in a high school or as many as we can about what journalism is and media literacy. And then there's also a practical benefit for the reporter. It gives them another way of getting embedded in the community.
Make me feel good and show me some examples of work that your reporters did that otherwise might not have been done. Success stories.
Yeah, so Will Wright, working at the Lexington Herald Leader in eastern Kentucky and rural Kentucky, did stories about how they didn't have clean running drinking water.
And where is he from? What's his story?
He grew up in Appalachian part of Pennsylvania and went to school at University of Kentucky. So he was of that area and wrote these stories about something that the people in that area had been complaining about for a while. It's not like he was the first one to uncover this fact, but he listened and broadcast those concerns and got a lot of attention for it, to the point that the state legislature allocated several million dollars to try to clean up the water in eastern Kentucky. We had another reporter, Michelle Liu, at Mississippi Today. She was right out of college, and she was placed in a community that she didn't know. So Michelle did a great series of stories about a spike in prison deaths. Sometimes we might have a misconception that the way accountability reporting happens is the way it did on the Spotlight movie, mm-hmm. where you have people working on it for 6 months. And that does happen sometimes. But most often what happens is beat reporters who are covering a topic regularly start to see a pattern. And that's what happened with Michelle. And you'd see her stories, 9 deaths in August, and then another story, 10 deaths in August, and 11 deaths. You start to see over time, this is not an anomaly. This is a deep problem.
Give me another example of accountability reporting.
Zach Podmore, who had been a very talented freelance reporter out west, we placed him at the Salt Lake Tribune. And he was assigned to one of the lowest income counties in the state. And very quickly, he found that the county had been lobbying on a controversial parks project against the popular sentiment. But more importantly, that they had been double billed by their lobbying firm and had overpaid. That came to light, and the county got a refund of about $100,000. Obviously, lots of accountability reporting is uncovering problems, billions of dollars of waste. But I like this one because $100,000 is about triple his salary. And so in one story, he made back for the people of that county something like twice or three times his personal salary. It's a cool example of journalists providing value to the community that doesn't get necessarily captured in page views or awards or just shows the public service nature of what they're doing.
To what extent is solving the crisis in local news an economic problem, and to what extent is it cultural?
Yeah, I think our focus on business models, which is important, we got to understand what the problem is. But the solution is not going to be the new app that somehow manages to magically solve this or a tweak to the commercial business models. Certainly, local newspapers have to do better with different revenue streams. But it also requires us as a society to start to think of local news as a civic responsibility in the same way that we think about the schools or the libraries. Important local cultural institutions. You can't have a healthy community without having a healthy local news sector.
I just recall that when I was a kid, I never paid for water, I never paid for TV, but now I'm used to doing both of those things, and so I wondered whether you needed a re-education.
On a fundamental level, we can't have community journalism without the community supporting it. We used to have that on the cheap in a way because advertisers were supporting it. Advertisers are not going to be able to hold up the local media system the way that they did before. And that's the new reality we have to get used to. If they're not going to, someone else has to. And the someone else has to be the residents of the communities themselves.
Have your reporters encountered a political problem as well, or the organizations that they're placed in? In an era when the president slimes journalists as enemies of the people and scum of the earth, are they facing great resistance when they ask communities to pitch in so that the reporters can help keep their officials accountable?
It is the case that sometimes reporters will go into communities where they are held in great suspicion. And by the way, that's not just in red states. We go into minority communities that feel like they have been badly covered for decades, if not centuries, and there's suspicion of reporters there too. Mm-hmm. Our solution is really basic. Just be there. Tell their stories. And we find that that is working. You know, Will Wright, the reporter who covered Eastern Kentucky, one of the reddest counties in the country, and a huge amount of suspicion about the local newspaper. But over time, they started to view Will Wright as the guy who helped get them cleaner drinking water, not as Will Wright, enemy of the people.
Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Steve Waldman is president and co-founder of Report for America.
Let's just say this is nobody's fault. Sure, big media companies were avaricious and short-sighted and inept. And yeah, vulture capitalists are swooping in to buy moribund properties, which they will cut and cut and cut till they're bled dry. And yes, Facebook, having acquired so much market power, has behaved amorally, except for when it behaves immorally. A convergence of forces, chief among them technology, has yielded local news dystopia. At the worst possible time, amid a pandemic of disease and a pandemic of lies, when elected officials confer impunity on their crooked cronies, when the information that society needs to choose its path is suppressed, just when the watchdogs are most needed, they're chained up and starving. This hour, we've laid it all out, past, present, and uncertain future. It's more frightening than maddening, and so we've leaned hard on understanding, soft-pedaled on blame. But if we're searching for accountability, mustn't we also look inward? Are you, news consumer, paying your way? Are you feeding the watchdogs? Do you subscribe to your local paper, your local public radio station? No? Well, then do that. As they say, now more than ever. It's not just that you've come to depend on us. It's that otherwise, the way things are going, the news desert may soon envelop us all. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Lana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, Zandra Ellen, and Eloise Blondio. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.